Thanksgiving. Some, I'm sure some of you, that will be your first Thanksgiving.
We made pizza.
Great, excellent.
Saturday night, we were baking.
Yesterday I ordered Chinese food, so.
Yeah, it was your girl's birthday. We had a party.
Ooh, party. Nice.
It was my place, and we were so loud the cops came to the party.
Whoa. Great. So Dan would like me to tell you my story about my first Thanksgiving. That's when I first met Dan. And then they invited me to Thanksgiving, and somehow I found Dan scary at the moment. I have no idea why. But I was being a TA and a leading recital section, so I asked my students, what should I wear to go to a Thanksgiving dinner? Then they unanimously told me it would be very inappropriate unless I show up with a turkey costume. With that note, we'll start the class. And so yeah, I have things to random things to say about, well, not random, but just non-physics things. So I hope you are all seen the course website. And if you look at the notes, yes, it's an unusually long notes for 14 lectures. But see, this is my take. When I was a student, I really don't like it when I say trivially, this you can be derive this. Oh, in simple two lines, you will get this. Come on, right? So your notes contain probably 30% of your notes as some footnotes. But of course, I encourage you to derive it trivially. But you know, I also derived it, and I don't want to delete them, so they are in the footnotes. If you have time, derive them. If you don't, at least go through the calculation. Some of them are quite important. And the second thing I heard, people told me that they want to see interview questions as early as possible. Hence, they are posted. If you are not those people, just pretend they are not posted. But they are posted. And if you have seen it, you will see the first part. About the first part, of course, there are no really questions for you to answer. I want to hear your story about a QFT. Okay? And it's about one story about SU2, one story about psi, the Dirac field, and one story about spinner. I hope I remember it right. I wouldn't change it. The one online is right. And home one is already posted. In home one, you will study this very, very important group. We'll talk about what's group later. But the point is, we're going to study really hard about the special relativity, which is, you know, part of the story. And then, well, some question I thought it might be tricky. So it comes with a quiz. And if you do the quiz, you will find the correct answer to your homework for the first two parts. And this is a heart request that I hope that you can finish before next Monday's lecture, because I want to use some of the results. But then the deadline is Monday night, so at least before Tuesday lecture, we will actually use them. And about quizzes, well, I'm very adhered to my quizzes, so I really hope you to do them. But then Dan told me that it wasn't before, so now it's a split. There are some must-do quizzes. I really need you to do them. And there are the other quizzes, as I said. I'm very touched with my quizzes. So as there's a Chinese saying, the important thing you have to emphasize three times. So if I check and quite a few of you guys didn't do quizzes, I'll just be like, do quizzes, do quizzes, do quizzes, like every day as part of the lecture. So please do them. And I think, wow, I forgot to do this, is write the title of the course. well, Ruth, as you have, you would see that she will carefully keep track of all the 13 or 14 lectures I count. So here we go, we have a title. So the part one, I hope you have seen the course outline. Yeah? Have, you have? It's a puzzle. So what kind of puzzle are we talking about? So I actually have it for you. So I have quantum mechanics and theory of special relativity. And they don't work. They almost work, not really. So they don't work. And it seems you have been told, miraculously, the theory, this field will appear in the middle and then happy ending. But really? Where did the field come from? All I want is this. I know it doesn't work, but you can't just randomly say, let's start with fields because it works. So we are actually trying to do, this is what I'm gonna do. With quantum mechanics meets special relativity. And special relativity do something, we'll see. We'll see what kind of requirement the quantum mechanics need to be satisfied to actually have special relativity together. So this puzzle is quite elaborated than just insert the fields in the middle, which we'll record it in this board, and you'll see how this puzzle grow, and somehow they all meet. But this week, unfortunately, this puzzle will grow one piece. It's an important piece. That's why it takes a bit longer. So that is my puzzle for you. And that is the real puzzle. And the second part, as Thanos know, because Thanos is the TA, wave to the students, please. And part two is a game. So this game is called a QED, and it's for one plus person, about 15 minutes. And it includes two game pieces, an electron and a photon. And it's like how you play the game. You're like, this is my turn. Pick a game piece and pick an action. What's your action? You can either move or you can spit a photon out or absorb the photon. Okay, this is not the game we're gonna play at the end of the class. At the end of the class, we have a different game, which is like a more, this is like the sandbox of the game. You can do whatever you want. And the end of the class is a little constrained. So you have some boundary conditions. And I'll bring that a game at a some point. Okay, so. Shall we start?
Yeah.
Thank you. So when quantum mechanics met special relativity, special relativity asks, oh wait, no, we are in Canada. Special relativity says, how do you do? Quantum mechanics says, how do you do? And then special relativity says, asks. This is our big question. It's pretty big. The question says, if I have a quantum state observed by Alice, and I have a bulb, you know, I'm really not very good at drawing, but this is a rocket going somewhere. But it would observe another state. And of course, the big question is, what is this state? So we'll be spending a long time, really a long time, about four lectures trying to answer this question. But what I can claim to you is if quantum mechanics is not able to answer this question, then it can never claim that it included special relativity. That's what all special relativity is about, is like inertial frame. The physics is the same. The state, not necessarily, but what is the state? there could be another state. And of course, it also changed my drawing primes. Special relativity says, no, drawing primes is not the answer. The answer is, what is it in terms of the original state? And so what do we know? Here's a question for you. What do we know in the case of Alice and Bob states? You have one state, you have another state. What does special relativity tell us? Even without quantum mechanics, what does special relativity tell us if we go from here to on the train? The physics does not change. Okay, now let's add quantum mechanics back. What is physics in quantum mechanics?
Expectation values, probabilities.
Very good, perfect. So physics tells us that this probability thing, which is known as physics, cannot change, because that's all we know about special relativity. The physics cannot change. Well, I'll just write the definition of these probability things as we interpret it now. It's some amplitude modular square. Yeah? Very good. Let's move on. One choice. One choice about this thing. I'm only writing the amplitude now, as you can see. What's a sort of good choice that it will maintain the modulus square, the amplitude square, the probability to be the same?
Phase change.
Phase change. Well, let's just make it easier. Let's just say that it didn't change. Simple choice. You want the square not change. What if the thing inside is not even changing? And apparently, that's a choice that the nature makes, which is called unitary. And so it's the claim that if quantum mechanics evolved, well, in this case, not evolved unitarily, but during a symmetry transformation, if it was a unitary operator, then it'll be good, because the idea of this unitary operator, and this is what Wigner claimed. Wigner claimed, let's log our important discovery, is Wigner claim that, well, I don't know the details, but it's going to be a unitary operator, parenthesis, anti-unitary operator with the anti-linear property. But I don't really want to get into that. It's a little complicated, but it's in the notes. But let's just assume our word is just unitary. And let's see what happens. What happens is that we know these operator can jump from one side to the other and acquires a dagger. That's called the definition of adjoint. And then, ha, if I want it to be exactly the same, I can just require this to be one. And this is what Wigner claimed. That's it. So if you get u dagger u equals 1, then u is a very good operator that connects with two observers.
Why don't you constrain your equations more than you needed to? Because
it's very, that's a very good question. That Wigner says, I prove. I don't need these phases. Those are not the good choices. Like, the proof is in Weinberger chapter 2, appendix A. so I really can't explain that. in a good way. So I'll refer you that Wegener actually, it's called the Wegener theorem, is that it needs to be either unitary or anti-unitary. And anti-unitary says it will require a complex conjugate. That will work.
Can I ask
yeah.
really quick question?
Yeah.
So what is the outline? I don't want you to prove it, but what is the, what, where does he start? And what does he get to? I mean, does he assume there is a change, phase change, and then?
See, that's very good, right? This is homework for me. And I'll provide you an outline, hopefully. It might not be a good one of this proof. Say tomorrow, okay?
Okay.
If it's good enough, I'll try to present it. If it's not, I'll just post it as a PDF note. that's a very great question. A lot of times, that's all about learning physics at this level is about is writing outlines. I mean, you at some point, if you do enough calculation, you will know how to do those calculations. But would you remember? Maybe you would, but at my age, no. that's what happens to me. Okay, so we'll delay this little doubt. Why Wegener is then managed to prove it's either unitary or anti-unitary later? But let's move on with the belief that the Wegener theorem works. And it says, let's introduce new people here. Says, this is what a Wegener says. And the Wegener, well, Wegener says it again if I have a person called a Carol. And it all related to the Bob state by another unitary operator. I don't know what it is. I don't know either of these, but it exists. Guess we're mathematicians. So, but I can use the Bob state in there, and we get this. And this is the Alice state. You're like, wait a second. What is Bob doing here? If Bob is not here, Carol state is still related to Alice and maybe a new operator. So what we gathered here is that there is a binary map given me two of these unitary operators, and I get another one. And remember, where did we get them? These are something labeled symmetry. These are all related to symmetry. And symmetry, as in classical physics many, many times you have learned, is something that physics doesn't change. So this enlightened me to show you something symmetric. Which is a Mandarin orange, very appropriate because I speak Mandarin. And you can see these objects, they are symmetric. You can just turn them. Okay, roughly symmetric. The sticker break the symmetry. But let's remove the sticker. Probably not on myself. But it has this rotational symmetry for a orange, but if I peel it, what happens if I peel an orange, mandarin orange? So some of the things you want to know about mandarin orange is first, it's more tasty than the regular orange. Also, you can peel it. And now, see, these oranges develop these sections. So now you can't do arbitrary rotation. It's no longer symmetry. There's a section there. You have to rotate one section onto the other section. Symmetry breaking in an orange. And now I have lots of objects. No. These are for you. So I hope every four of you will get something. Okay. So I'll read through completely arbitrary. So what I want you to discuss with your nearby people to figure out which operation will make it a symmetry. And if you're not sitting close to one, please move close to them. All right, you will have 3 minutes. And online students, this is the time to look at your symmetric object too. So, they should be flat.
But if you have one dot,
you want to ignore the dots. And then think about what could break the symmetry. So it's like, assume, you know, orange is a perfect sphere with a hat. And then you assume for real life object, there is all sorts of things break this. Okay, time's up. Every group needs to have one volunteer to tell me, and the whole class, you start with, like, try to hold it up high and says, this is what we have and what kind of symmetry operations we discovered. And yes, next round, I want the volunteer to be different. We will.
We volunteer right now?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. Okay. Should I stand up?
Huh? Yeah, please. No, just like it so that other people can know what you have.
Okay, so here's a triangle, right? It's a triangle, it's got 3 points. We say, how do we map the triangle back to itself? So you could, if you rotated it, since the dots are labeled, we have 1, 2, and 3, it's not mapped back to itself like this. But if you rotated it 3 times, it maps back to itself. You can also interchange these 2 angles like that way, and now the 3 is over there, the 2 is over there, and do that a second time, and it maps back to itself. And likewise, you can like You can map along any one of these axes twice. You can do the interchanging of these thingies, and then it maps back to itself. So it's got this sort of rotational symmetry, and then the other symmetry with the flipping. So
great. Next, we will do it in order so that because next one I want to do the other one. Otherwise, it's hard to keep. Go ahead.
It also has a kind of parity symmetry, but actually its front and behind is different. So we think there's only one symmetry, which is the rear.
The what symmetry?
The one also from like full rotation. There's also a rotational symmetry with like one rotation.
Okay, next. Next one.
So, Earth is this ball. So, if you ignore the color, which maybe we shouldn't do, but if you do, you can say that it has rotational symmetry about this point because it has a little divot here. But if you don't ignore the color, the only symmetry it would have would be if you like rotate it along some axis and then it goes back to the same initial place it was. And then something that I guess we kind of brought up in discussion is if you like flip it over and then get back to the same point, isn't that just the identity? So we weren't sure if that counted as a symmetry, but a lot of people have said that that
identity counts as a symmetry. Thank you for saying it. We'll utilize in a few minutes when we are done with next.
So we have this, I don't know the name of this figure, I'm sure it exists, but it consists of, like, each surface of it is a triangle. So we have a rotation in a plane parallel to any surface by 120 degrees. I think it's basically the main symmetry of the thing, but also you can mirror it in some directions when you look at it and it's symmetric to me. Yeah, I think that's basically all. But if you also consider there are different numbers, then you have only trivial symmetry. I think that's it.
Really? It is a D20. And next.
Okay.
Okay, I was hoping you'd not open that rectangular.
Oh, okay. Okay, so if we consider the map mask outside of the package, then there's only one symmetry, namely the mirror symmetry, because there is a small metal bar here, so you cannot really flip it this way because it won't be the same.
Yeah, because then we can be physicists and then ignore all the corrections and it says we'll have that symmetry anyway. So interesting. I was supposed to. That's a matrix. You can flip matrix. But yes, that's exactly what you said. So interesting. I don't know. Removing that container, they still have the same symmetry. All right. And next.
We don't have an object. We just use a cup.
This okay.
Has sweetness to it. So and depending on how you look at it, like if you look at it like this, depends on the view. Mm-hmm. Also has like reflection symmetry. But like if it was like this, it doesn't. So then we're confused. Like, okay, how does the view depend? Like, how does the view affect the symmetries? We didn't understand. But like, it's like this. Like from this view, it would have reflection symmetry, but from this view, it would not.
But it does still have reflection symmetry, except like it is plane as what. Yeah, it's on a different plane. That's. Oh. Okay, next.
Okay, so if you like looking at this at 0 order, it has U1 symmetry. But if you look at it with these thingies over here, it has these thingies. So it would be like a discrete symmetry of 120 degrees if you just rotate it. And it also has like mirror symmetry if you just look at through one of these thingies. And of course, identity, flip it twice.
Okay, perfect. Next.
So we have a brain. And it has reflection symmetry. So these sides are the same. And also, if you take 360, it comes back to the same position because it's a 3D object. But it would be interesting.
It will be interesting, and one of these objects will come back in the second part. And Sukanna, can you hear me? Can you unmute and tell us what do you have?
Yeah, the link that you sent actually was of American football. So there are symmetries, like you can rotate it by 360, you get back the same along the long axis and basically the major axis. Then you have symmetries like reflection symmetry. If you cut it in half along the cross section, then you will, there are two such planes that can like divide it into two equal similar structures. So I could identify three symmetries there.
Thank you. And to see all the daily life things, if you're enough a physicist, they will have some symmetry. So mathematicians, though, they like to abstract things. And this, for the lack of, I guess, lack of creativity of naming things, they decide these things. The symmetries of an object is a group of symmetries. That is making me doing Google referencing is very hard. So group theory is a theory to describe all the symmetries you have seen, and they are just a little abstract. And I should now say that the goal of today's lecture is to learn the definitions and to see some examples. Okay, so we're going to define group theory. And the first property is, all right, this is a ginormous Rubik's cube. And the group for this Rubik's cube is called the Rubik's cubes group. So, but anyway, the point is, this is a very symmetric object, and thus is very good to help me to define a group. So this is what I'm going to say, is that this is a symmetric operation. And if I do another symmetric operation on top of it, it's a still symmetry.
Are you assuming it's
they are all plain. They got all the same colors. It doesn't work for the puzzle, but it works for my person. Thank you.
Actually, it works. You win instantly.
I know, right? But what I want you to do is to look at your object and do a symmetry operation and do another symmetry operation and see if it's still a symmetry. Yeah, you all have some objects and you all identify some symmetry. And is it a symmetry? Well, this is, the object is called D3. So this is the abstract way to say it is a binary operation. Combining two things, get another thing. Binary operations, combining two things to give another thing. And what makes it a group theory is that if G1 is in this group, which is also in this set, if G2 is in the set, then the binary operation is going to still remain in the set. This is, I think, somewhat easier to understand using the symmetry operation, because symmetry means nothing changed. So you do something, didn't change anything. You do another symmetry, it still didn't change anything. So you combine them together, likely nothing has changed. So this is what mathematicians come up with, the first rule. And maybe you heard it from the mathematicians, called the closed If you just only do symmetry operations, you will never generate a non-symmetry operation. You will always remain in this set. And the second thing is, actually many of you pointed to me, very importantly, E, which is called the identity, exists. This is rather nice to see. I just stare at the thing and not doing anything. Symmetry. Right? If you are called it a group and you are some abstraction of some symmetry operation, then not doing anything is definitely a symmetry. And the third one says inverse exists. Okay, so let me get back to this. It says if you can do a symmetry operation like this, then you can do, you can go back to do the other symmetry operation such that it looks like I have done nothing to it. This is slightly subtle. If you read on the book, a book, they will tell you that there's some left inverse, right inverse. They are the same, left and then right and it is the same. For us, I think it'll be okay if we stick. So the last one is called associativity. It's the same associativity we learned from adding numbers, multiplying numbers. It says that, and in my case, it's like, okay, that thing is not very stable. It's like if I rotate, if I plan to rotate twice and then rotate once, and then rotate three times. Then if you do the, combine the first two and the combine the second two, it's not gonna change. And hence, that is definition of a group three, and this is our first puzzle piece. So what do? Is that stuck with this puzzle piece for a while. And next week, there will be lots of puzzle pieces, just they keep just popping up. So I have to do a disclaimer. You will have the very brief group theory from this course. My goal is really just saying as much about the group theory as minimally possible so that we can answer that question. Yeah.
Can group theory relate to special relativity?
Because there are symmetries in the special relativity, which is the, remember the Alice Bob thing?
Good point. Okay, thank you.
No, thank you. I should have mentioned. Sorry. I should have mentioned, yes, that's why that, the special relativity actually need to the group theory first. And after this long meeting, quantum mechanics will meet somebody else. Okay, also some other theory things. Okay, so the examples, let me try. So there is this, I'm trying not to spend time with finite group because it seems that the non-finite group is more useful for our purpose, as you can see that it's kind of a continuous translation or continuous boost or continuous rotation. So this is, but nevertheless, I'll give a couple. It says that there is a thing called a parity. I heard some of you are interested in parity from Dan. We are going to have, a long winding time with this parity. This is the first time it shows up, says, hey, I'm just going to flip all the x's in the space. And you can check, if you do it twice, it'll go back. So it is the simplest finite group that is not a decided. And then this one, okay, I will try to, it's the repealed orange group, is that you can do this, and as you, some of you have discovered, a lot of things have this uncyclic group. And some people like to write this as this. So each point is like the complex root of the unit circle. The last one we're gonna mention, because it's everything. It says take some number of objects and label it as 1 to n. And symmetry group says find all the permutations, so n factorial. And turns out that this group is indeed large enough, and this guy Carter has proved all finite group is some sort of a smaller component of this gigantic group. Also, speak of Carter. There's maybe a different, but there is a guy called Nathan Carter wrote a book called the Visualized Group Theory.
Called the what?
Visualized Group Theory. Oh. Using what? No, maybe it's Kaylee. All these mathematicians. Okay. So Carter, no, so like it's somewhere in the course website, and I try to capture the beauty of that book in Appendix A. But the book is beautiful. It's all about the Kaylee diagrams and how to display relationship between the groups. And yeah, it's fantastic, and I kind of can guarantee you that's the textbook with the most number of pictures. it's pretty. And we're not gonna talk about it. So now let's move to infinite, but it's still countable. And we like to focus our attention in integers. And the binary operation is a familiar plus. So is it a group, not a group?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a set. Yeah. You know, ask the question, is it a closed?
Yeah.
Is it, does it have an identity?
Yeah.
And can you inverse it? And well, we know that class has associativity. Very good. Next question, still regarding integers. Now it's a multiplication. And this is a group.
No, because zero, there's no inverse.
You don't have inverses.
Uh-huh. We can't inverse zero. Okay. What if I take zero out of the equation and there's no zero? Non-zero integers. Huh? It's still no inverse. Okay. Well, then it's not a group then. Okay. No, I want to give you a break. Well, okay, we'll have a break. Because, you know, I'm aging and I can't talk for 90 minutes. And we'll be back at 35. As I said, we start at 35. And Now is what we really cares mostly because the symmetry of special relativity is a Lie group. And Lie means parameters are continuous. That's really what this means. Instead of like very jumpy, and now it's continuous, for example, R. Very continuous. R with, let's say, plus. It's very hard to refer to a group without telling people what's the binary operation. Okay, so Lie says, I have a group member G that is labeled by this phi tilde, and the phi tilde is just the list of the parameters. We don't know how many yet. And all these phi 1, phi 2, see, they go from minus infinity to plus infinity. Okay, it's very common and makes our things easier to choose when the parameter are all zero, the group member is, which thing do you think? It's very convenient.
If all uncountably infinite groups, Lie groups.
Uncountable infinite. Don't know. I'll figure out. Good question. Thank you. Good question. And then, but think about the question. If I choose all my continuous parameter to be zero, what do you think I should choose a group member? Special goes to special. And I think it's just, I think it'll work to some extent. If you don't make this choice, you just make yourself all have all these extra bits carried everywhere when you do a proof. So everybody says, let's just do that. And then there is 2D rotation. And this rotation is parameterized by one angle. Yeah, from 0 to 2 pi. Yeah, 2 pi. Yeah?
Wait, when you, would that mean like one of, oh, okay, only one of the parameters would be theta and the rest would be 0?
Or well, then we just say that they don't exist because all the rest of parameters are like 0 and forever 0.
Okay, so we're defining the new G to just be 2.
Thank you. Clarification. So as if you have one parameter, then we'll just say a very good example is a 2D rotation. And then you get a group. And that group is defined as soon as you give an angle. Something like cosine theta, sine theta, minus sine, something like that. I don't remember things anymore. But here. Then we can do 3D rotation. And then now we can have an angle around the plane. One, two, three, and 3, 1, because we have that many planes. So like every 2 points, I can do a rotation. You can also say every x you can do it. But it's kind of special. We will see. Okay, so as I said, I'll start and say, look, there's an orange. And it has this 2D rotational symmetry labeled by J theta. And if you peel it, then you are no longer a Lie group. You become a finite group. And if I eat it, it will be something else.
Wait,
3D rotation? Like couldn't you parameterize it with just two parameters?
Oh, for this? Because it has this little hat, right? You kind of rotate this way because this little hat.
Oh.
This little part is clearly.
Wait. But no, just the 3D rotation.
Yeah.
A 3D rotation, like usually you have like you could just have like two angles, like a theta rotating this way and a phi this way, right? You don't need.
Your three that's for a point.
Okay.
You're thinking about a vector of a 3D.
You have like a 3D object.
Yeah.
What are, okay, wait, so you can rotate this way, and what's the third way?
There's one corresponding to each axis.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for who answered the question. Yeah.
The length of the vector is constant under rotation.
Exactly.
One of them will be dependent on the other two.
Should we just have an object in this?
No, it means like if you have a Z, this is a rotation, but you can rotate it this way, and you can rotate it this way. They are not, they are independent. I can try to show you. It's in Z's book. Oh, this book is nice. I was reading the book. So Z has a group theory in nutshell. All his nutshell is really cute. But anyway, it was really nice, and he actually showed you how do you parameterize the there's three rotations in three distinctive angles. So you can rotate around if you have a three vector, and if you rotate it. X in the two directions, you're not going to get. Okay. Oh, so now it's your turn. So as I said, we're doing reverse order. So Kenna, can you tell me? Oh, great. Sorry. You should think about it. Look at your objects and think about it and trying to connect with the group theory. And yes, there are some instructions. If you have a finite object, and then try to figure out the ways of independently do the symmetry. And if you think your object possess a Lie symmetry, then you should tell me what the group is. To some extent, it might in addition has more other symmetries, but identify something about the symmetry, the Lie symmetry, and tell me. And if you have a die, it's going to be a very hard problem to identify all the symmetries. On the other hand, you have more dice. Then try to identify which pair share the same symmetry. So this is going to be hard. All right, 3 minutes.
Okay. We don't
have any. Only you. I don't
know.
I could feel the
mic.
The identity is symmetry that.
Like,
because the plane. So we really. It's our big group.
Here is a hint. It's very interesting if you take a dot and find the center of the face, of each face, then you'll get another die. And they are actually dual to each other. They will have the symmetry, same symmetry as each other. It's the symmetries can be described by the continuous parameter. Like this, any continuous.
So like for public,
exactly. Okay, time's up. Lukenya, can you start us up?
Sure. Should I continue to talk about the previous example itself?
Can you come again? Sure.
Oh, so you sent me that example of American football through the link. So should I talk about that only? Okay, so it has basically, can say, one-fold rotational symmetry because we have to rotate by 360 to get back its original shape. And it has two discrete symmetries, like two reflection symmetries. So I guess you can pin it as a C2 group.
Okay. So that gives us a Z4 and maybe Z2 in the parity direction. Okay, and then which is the last group? That one. Yes.
So we have the brain. Discrete symmetries in reflection and upon rotation of 2π. And I'm not sure what the group would be for that.
C2? No. Cyclic group, C2, sorry. Lukenya is right. I was wrong. So that is often referred as the CN symmetry. And the parity is part of it when CN is 2. Okay, next one. Next group is.
So we have
Z3.
And also, if we neglect this part,
U1 is the. Is another way to describe this 2D rotation. It says the claim is that I can describe that group with e to the I theta. E to the I theta. In principle, that's a 2D rotation. Okay. Next group.
So we have the blue mark, and it only has the C2 group symmetry.
Yes. And then the next group?
We had the mask, and it only had mirror symmetry down the middle, so it would just be Z2.
And maybe another one.
Well, there's a metal part at the top. So.
Yeah. But if you ignore the metal part, it'll have 2Z2. And sometimes that one, because that one without the metal part, it has this famous group called the Klein 4. Which is Z2 and Z2, and somehow that comes with a name. And then the next one.
I can tell you, I'm probably can the second time, right?
Huh?
I can present the second time, right?
No.
okay, so this one have 120 degrees symmetry around any of its face.
Uh-huh.
That's Z3.
Uh-huh.
And Z3 times, but there are many faces. So
there are many faces. This is a very hard object, and I'll just hold it up for everybody. But there is also a article about symmetry group of platonic objects. This is what they are. They are called the platonic solids. And they could have 20, 12, 4, 6, 8 faces. That's it. There are only 5. If you're interested, I can leave this around and then you can look at them. The interesting thing to look at it is that this thing has a 4 vertex and a 4 faces, which means if you switch them, it doesn't matter. But this one only have a small one. It's a regular guy. It has 6 faces and 8 vertex. Guess what? This is the 8th guy, which has 8 faces. By the 6 vertex. Isn't that interesting? Turns out that they share the same group. They are called a duo. And the last two is this one have 20 faces by the 12 vertex. And this one has 12 faces and 20 vertex. So those two turn out also duo to each other. So there are 5 die, but there are only 3 distinctive groups. So there is an article on the course website. You can read about it, how they find out all the 60 different symmetries of 20D. It's crazy. And they find some symmetry, like take this 2 faces, and you can do something with it, and take 2 different faces, you can do something about it. It's crazy. But if you are crazy enough to explore the platonic solids, you are encouraged to. Okay, but I was hoping that somehow we feel that if we focus on the continuous symmetry, it seems that living in our space-time, okay, not time, just space, we all end up with a rotation one way or the other.
Number 6
comes. Huh?
Infinite countable is 4 and then lead groups is 5.
What? Yeah. We went to 6. We went. Infinite countable is 4 and then lead groups are 5. Oh, sorry. That's just my own number. Only meaningful to me. In case I am out of order. So sorry, I should have gave them some number, but it turns out there are no number. Maybe I'll remember tomorrow. Okay, so turns out that this rotation group somehow is interesting. They always show up. If you look at the everyday objects, they either have some rotational symmetry or they don't. Well, 50-50. But it turns out that they are very important. And as mathematicians, we'll pretend to be a day or two, is that they like to generalize. They're like, okay, 1D rotation, well, sorry, 2D rotation, 3D rotation. Let's be brave and talk about ND rotation. So what is rotation? Rotation says we have a vector, and we can expand it in some spaces. Have you seen Einstein convention yet?
Yeah.
Perfect. I don't want to write it. And the rotation, what is a rotation? Rotation says we have a vector. I can calculate how big this is. This is xi, xi. And rotation is a symmetry operator on the X such that the norm doesn't change. That's what a rotation means. Rotation means the length of the vector does not change. Okay. Let's hope. So then we play the same game, right? There is a psi phi, and then it comes with this Yule-Wigner introduced. And in our case, we have some x, and then some r rotation comes out. So I'm trying to skip and tell you if I do the analogous derivation over there, where we get u dagger u equals 1, then, because it's the same idea, I'm keeping the norm of something not changed. And I hope from the preserve norm argument, I get to this. Yeah, it's the same derivation. Before you have a u dagger u, and but now rotation, they are real. So if it's real, there's no dagger anymore, just transpose ring. And that's taken as the definition of rotation. And alternatively, you can try to say it preserves the metric.
You can check the length of the vector with another kind of, like with parity as well, but parity is not rotation, like, or any mirror transformation.
Yeah. Very good. See, I'm trying to stay away. So very good. Perfect. See, parity shows up again. Thank you. And that's right. And so parity does have the idea of preserving norm. It is defined in the orthogonal group, which is this guy. It's just not defined in the special orthogonal, which special because it connects to identity. Okay, today we'll hear this a lot, special because it connects to identity. And at some point this will be important. So what do people often don't study this? Unless necessary, which means we're gonna study a lot about parity. But people normally say, let's forget about the part that's not connected to identity and focus on the part connects to identity. And it's when you pick the plus sign, it turns into a special orthogonal group, which kicks the parity up. So, very good question. But why do we so desperately want to connect with identity? So remember, where is identity in the parameter? Ah, I forgot about this. It's been a while, but where is identity in the parameter space? It's here. So why do we so desperately want to be connected with identity? What's good about a close to zero?
Use Taylor expansion.
Perfect. So we'll do that tomorrow. So that's why people are like, oh, not the connected identity. What do you do with them? And they'll be like, let's deal with the case when we are connecting identity and say what do we get. So that's why. And here, let's count the dimension. Dimension of the group is equals to how many this G1, this phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, it's just the number of those parameters. That's what we call the dimension of the group. So let's see, we have 2D rotation, one, dimension one, and the 3D rotation, dimension three. One, two, three. And this come back a lot about dimension of group. how do we count? If you have an n-dimensional rotation, how do we know how many different rotations there are? Yeah?
You can rotate around every axis, like every dimension. So
you can rotate it around every axis. That's right.
This doesn't work for two dimensions for some reason. Like two is
so, one. So let's think about if there is an axis here. And in 3D, I have 2 points. But if we're in 3D, 4D, then there will be another. So you will be have a cube. Then how exactly do you mean by rotating around the axis? So rotation is actually about the plane. And once you pick a plane to rotate, you find the norm, and then you rotate. I mean, a rotator around axis are definitely some of these rotations we can do, but it's not all. So how many rotations can we do in n dimensions?
N choose two,
because we want to make a plane. Okay. So that's one of the most important group, because that's your homework, is to study this guy. Plus, minus, minus, minus. So this preserves the metric of that. And then it's the homework. And it's only after we study the symmetry of special relativity, then we have a chance to answer our big question. Oh, it's there. The leg is like, we're gonna answer some of the questions as it's gonna be a U or anti-U. But we want to know what's the U. We actually want a concrete answer. Okay, so let's move on to the so-called unitary group. And guess what? Unitary group is defined by that. Seems useful. And this also have un. And again, as we always do, we want to be special and take the determinant to be one, and we get a special unitary. Okay, now we need to do some parameter counting. Wait, this is called the rotations in the complex dimension. I have no intuition about how to rotate in a complex dimension. And if you do, please let me know. This rotating in the complex point, it's weird. So we unfortunately have to do the other parameter counting, says if we list all our parameters and then subtract the independent equations, we'll get the independent parameters. So how many parameters are there in the UN matrix? It's an n by n, every entry is complex. How many real parameters? Sorry. Because the dimension of group is always labeled by real parameters. Huh? That's right, because we have 2 for every entry and we have square. And now, how many independent equations are there? This is a little crazy, is that you have to notice a very special thing, is that if you take U dagger U and dagger it again, you get a U dagger U. So these are not just any equations. These are the equations are permission. So Now the question would be, if I have an n by n complex matrix, but I know it's Hermitian, how many entries?
It's the upper.
Yeah, take the upper. Let's take the upper, which is, but these guys can be complex. And then you take whatever is in the middle, diagonal. These ones are constrained, can only be real. And you don't care about the lower triangle anymore because it's a Hermitian. So lower triangle is defined by that. And all this thing turned out to be actually very nice. All these things are just n squared. And this is what we'll leave.
Wait, sorry, how can we subtract off the diagonal?
So these, I should have to do this. So these are the independent equations.
Oh, okay. Oh, got you.
So in this parenthesis, I'm calculating how many equations are there using the knowledge that they are Hermitian. And then I want to subtract all my equations and I get something. So that's for you. What do you think for SU?
Minus one.
You have to minus one. Because this thing gave you a constraint that's determined of U could be a face. So we actually lost a prim. So we need to subtract it away. And in the case of the SON, well, we didn't lose a parameter, it's discrete. So this one says count parameters. And this one we didn't lose. And this one do.
Wait, sorry, if the dimension of SUN is n squared minus one.
Yeah.
What is n squared the dimension of? Oh, is that of UN?
Yeah. Sorry, let me put them in circles. Okay, well, at this point, I'll say SU2 is very, very, the lowest thing we can make that. When n equals 2 is tremendously. And then we're going to have a tutorial and a lecture, and then we'll use the result. So if you have exposed into Lie group and the Lie algebra, Lie group, and the most thing you want to pay attention is SU2. And as you say that in the interview questions, one of the questions says, tell me a story about SU2.
Okay, when you have U there, do you mean N? Like the U times U minus one? Is that supposed to be N?
Thank you. That's very odd. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so then there's random things I want to say about group. Is that a say some group that commutes? Like you can do the whatever order you want. And of course, the integer groups are all like that. You can switch. But most of the groups are actually not. And this has a name called abelian. And of course, the not ones are called the non-abelian. No, most of the things do not commute. It's like if I rotate this way, and this way, if you have a global, and it's not the same. Then you will end up into a different direction. Or maybe I'll come back to this demo. And then you can make groups smaller. It's called a subgroup. Subgroup is very well named. It says if you find a subset of this set, which happens to be a group, it's a subgroup. It's like the best definition ever. It's like, and of course, the nice thing about a subgroup is identity by itself, always a subgroup person. And then if you take the whole thing, it's always a subgroup. And then what else you want to know is about like similar. Sometimes you will find some groups are similar to each other. So the, here is what we mean by. So if you map, you have a map such that the map preserves this binary operation. So this is the binary operation in the G prime group, and this is the binary operation in the G group. And you would see that this multiplication is preserved. And if you can establish that, oh, you were like, yeah, very similar. And the official name is called a homomorphism. A little long for me. Okay, but then if you have this F to be some one-to-one and the onto, I hope these words familiar to you about like functions, then you will call, wow, it's not just similar, it's the same. And the word for same is isomorphism. And we will see one of these homomorphism is very important for our study of this special relativity group, which is the group of, that's the Lorentz. I have to add this in some special way. This whole thing, study this thing. Look at it. It's two parts and it's very non-trivially related, those parts. But it turns out some homomorphism and some other trick will make this something actually studyable. And I'll see you at the group line.